Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and both Jim and I are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed because we knew very early not only who won first place in the Florida primary last night, but second, third, and fourth, pretty much by 8:01 Eastern time, and that's always makes things nice and neat. Then you just wait for the speeches, and apparently Newt Gingrich takes a 14-point loss to declare himself the only other person in the race, and Mitt Romney basically declares the race over. So a very interesting set of speeches, but the good martini today, Jim, and there's perhaps a mixed opinions of the super PACs that resulted from the Citizens United decision, but clearly they are having a major influence in this race. The Romney super PAC seems to be very flush with cash, and given that just about everyone expects Obama's formal campaign to easily outpace Romney's formal campaign fundraising, these super PACs could do a pretty good job of leveling the field. Now, there'll obviously be some on the Democratic side as well, but you can only saturate the market so much. So the fact that there is an opportunity for the Republican nominee, if it's Romney, to be able to combat Obama for time on the airwaves means that there won't be a huge advantage for the incumbent in that department, potentially.
Yeah, I'm reminded of two thoughts. The first is, this is right on the front page of the Washington Post, the observation that when you put together the Romney campaign, the Romney super PAC, and then American Crossroads, which has Karl Rove involved in it, they raised $51 million in 2011, and they think they'll probably have $200 million this year. You add all those together, and you end up with a circumstance in which the Republican side is probably going to be toe-to-toe with the Obama campaign and the DNC and, you know, the labor unions, et cetera. So it's been a while since you could really make the argument the reason one side lost a presidential race was because of money. Generally, you know, money helps. Money, you got to pass a certain threshold. But, you know, look, it's not like the side of the right is going to have not have enough money to get their message out. It'll come down to other things. And one of the things that actually, just a good anecdote that I think illustrates this, kind of an argument that kind of gets into not just money, but also intensity and you know, whether the conservatives will really turn out, came from Jordan Gerke, who worked on the Sharon Angle campaign. And he observed, I think she raised something like $28 million after she won the primary, an unbelievable sum for a little-known candidate because she was taking on Harry Reid, who is a least favorite figure for many conservatives, certainly for listeners of this podcast. So when you look at that, you know, he observed that, look, it's not that Sharon Angle was a fantastic candidate, or you could argue that she was a very flawed candidate in a lot of ways, but conservatives really wanted to see Harry Reid gone. And so he kind of figures there'll be another, you know, as soon as there is a Republican nominee, he thinks that Republicans will all say, you know what, no matter how I feel about Romney, no matter how I feel about Newt or whoever the nominee is, I really want to see Barack Obama out of there. I really want to see Democrats out of Congress. I really want to see a return to small government, and, you know, people will come out for that. And I think you look at these donations for these PACs, et cetera, you know, there's some argument for that, that we are not going to get washed away by a Democratic tsunami this year. Still a lot of work to do, still a lot of road ahead, but, you know, there are much worse things to think about this morning. And our particularly strong bad martini might be one of them.
That could be true. And the bad martini, unfortunately, centers around the man who won a decisive victory in the Florida primary. He's now casting himself as the inevitable Republican presidential nominee, even though he has slightly over 1,000 delegates out of 1,144 yet to collect before clinching that nomination. Nonetheless, Mitt Romney, in an interview with CNN's Soledad O'Brien, was trying to make the point that he wants a middle class that is strong and vibrant, and unfortunately, it kind of came out like this.
I'm in this race because I care about Americans. I'm not concerned about the very poor. We have a safety net there. If it needs a repair, I'll fix it.
You just said, I'm not concerned about the very poor because they have a safety net. And I think there are lots of very poor Americans who are struggling who would say, that sounds odd. Can you explain that?
Well, you had to finish the sentence, Soledad. I said, I'm not concerned about the very poor that have a safety net, but if it has holes in it, I will repair them.
Got it.
And Jim, at this point, you would think Romney would then go into sort of the JFK line of, well, a rising tide lifts all boats. If we can get a strong and thriving middle class, well, then those below the middle class will have a chance to advance as well. And we got this.
You can choose where to focus. You can focus on the rich. That's not my focus. You can focus on the very poor. That's not my focus. My focus is on middle-income Americans.
And so basically, he left the impression that he just doesn't care about those people. And, of course, at the beginning of the answer, it was, I care about Americans. I don't really care about the rich. I don't really care about the very poor. So not really sure why they don't fit into the Americans class. But, Jim, a little explaining would have been good.
Mitt. What are we going to do with you, Governor? Because here's the thing. First of all, just about how the word only would have changed everything. As in, I'm not only concerned about the very poor. You know, like just that one tiny little qualifier would have completely changed the entire context. Missed it by one word, you can say. Because the other thing is that as he goes on for this answer, and I put up the whole transcript, the whole videos on Campaign Spot in case you're afraid we're chopping this up. And look, this is, by the way, the part you just listened to, that's what you're going to see in about $1 billion worth of attack ads from Obama, from the DNC, and from their allies this entire, for the rest of the year. There's a lot of really legitimate points that Romney almost sort of kind of alludes to in all of this. In other words, I mean, he can point out that, hey, you know what? If you're really worried about poverty, government programs can only take you so far. We've seen this for decades, that you throw more and more money at these programs. A lot of the problems of the poor, not all, but a lot of them relate to decisions that the poor make. If you don't finish high school, you're going to have a very hard time with upward mobility in this country. If you have kids before you're married, you're going to be taking on a big financial burden, and you're not going to have a very tough time, you know, rising up in the world, collecting savings, etc. If you do not go out and look for a job, and do not look for a better job, and you do not, you know, have an ambition to rise up in life, no government program can give that to you. So you've got all of those issues can be made there. You can talk about how, you know, the recession has been worse for the middle class because they had more to lose. You can think about, you know, people facing foreclosures. By and large, it's not the very poor. The very poor generally rent. You can talk about, you know, small businesses going under. Those are not the very poor. There's a lot of legitimate points that Mitt Romney could have made in there, and he didn't. And if he had just tried, if he had just said, how can I put this in the most destructive way possible? That's pretty much how he would have done it. If he had said, if I were possessed by the spirit of David Axelrod at this moment, how would I do this? How would I express this? And that pretty much is it. And it's kind of amazing this comes less than 12 hours after he has the biggest win of his campaign. Probably it makes him not only a solid front runner. It's kind of hard to see a scenario in which Newt catches him. But if he has gaffes like this, who knows? Who knows? I mean, I'm still hearing talk about trying to take this to a divided convention, a convention fight, and then picking somebody else because Romney has managed to prove so politically gaffe-prone. And what's kind of amazing is, remember, Greg, this was the guy who was vanilla. This was the guy who never said anything interesting. This was the guy who never said anything controversial. And then he blurts this out in a year when the president is going full-on populist. So there are a couple people who are saying this is not a big deal. It's going to blow over. I think this is potentially very, very troubling for the Romney campaign. And he can save himself from it. But so far, I have not seen the instincts of this campaign to really have the ability to hammer home and not necessarily instinctive message to an electorate that is full of economic anxiety at a time like this.
Yeah, it definitely lends itself to President Obama beating that dead horse as long as humanly possible. And what we got in terms of the latest economic numbers means he's certainly not going to be talking about that. So demonizing Romney just got quite a bit easier with a gift like that. And unfortunately, for people who haven't warmed up to Romney, if he is in fact the nominee, this really feeds into a stereotype, which makes it doubly worse because, you know, the caricature is of this Wall Street corporate raider type who is all about the bottom line and ultimately doesn't care about the people involved. And unfortunately, that got a little bit of fuel added to it, even if that was not what he intended to say. But we'll see what the impact of that is. Meanwhile, as for the president himself, one issue he certainly won't be talking about, probably on the campaign trail, though he tried to defend it in the State of the Union message, is all the taxpayer dollars wasted on Solyndra, Enerone, this huge battery company that he basically touted generically in the State of the Union. It's now belly up. And there's a lot of others along the way, but the president seems to think that, well, you just got to let a lot of these places go bankrupt, and eventually you'll get lucky. Well, as we have documented from time to time, the congressional Republicans, particularly in the House, are investigating this, and now the White House has decided that these investigations, Jim, are a waste of taxpayer money. Not the, I don't know what it's up to now, about $2 or $3 billion in taxpayer money, much of which isn't coming back to the taxpayers, by the way. So I'm not really sure that the argument that a few million perhaps spent on the investigation is really the worst act here.
Greg, I'm just picturing somewhere in the White House, you know, I don't know if Axelrod's out of Chicago, but, you know, the chief of staff is there. Carney's there. They're spitballing and say, okay, people, we're getting a lot of flack in this Solyndra thing. Blue Sky, just throw out ideas, you know, what do you got? Investigating waste is a waste of money. I love it. Let's go with that. Embrace that. It's audacious. It's bold. It doesn't make much sense, but let's go with this. Hey, if you've wasted money, don't look too hard at how it got lost. Just keep doing what you're doing. Yeah. That's the only way I can explain this kind of stuff. I realize that sometimes political events will back a White House into a corner, but when you're making a spin like this, either you're trying really, really hard or you're not even trying anymore. And I can't tell which state this White House is in. They clearly aren't all that worried about it. This is one of those things where I really feel that everyone in politics, at least once a day, should be hit by some sort of really difficult question. And they should just be able to say, pass. So, what's your response to the Cylinder investigation? Pass. They shouldn't, have to do that. Just as if somebody said to me, Jim, explain how the Romney statement will help him in the long run. Pass. I can't do it. You just can't say it. So, Debbie Wasserman Schultz needs it periodically. I think Carney should just be able to take a pass on this one and say, look, there is no way to say that we shouldn't be investigating Cylinder. So there you go.
That's the simple way to do it. But of course, in a year divisible by two, you'll never get that. You'll never get that anyway, but especially not an election year. Jim, some fun stuff, some really disturbing stuff today, but hopefully we'll get some better stuff tomorrow. Have a good one.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.